Jennifer Sanders.
Volker
Greimann.
Present.
Volker Greimann.
I'm here.
Valerie Tan.
I'm here, Glenn. Thank you.
Thank you.
Phil Corwin. Susan Kawaguchi.
Phil Corwin just joined.
Thank you. And Susan Kawaguchi? Not on yet. Paul McGrady? Not on yet. Heather Forrest?
Present, Glenn. Thank you.
Thank you. Tony Harris?
Present.
Rolf Ulrich Knobin?
Here.
Marilia Maciel? Not on the call yet. Amar El-Sadar?
Present.
David Cake? I think that's probably David. Ed Morris? Ed Morris is absent. Stefania Millen? Stefania? Not on the call yet. Stephanie Perrin will be half an hour late. Luke Gutierrez?
Here.
Carlos Gutierrez?
Here, Glenn. Thank you.
Thank you. Olivier Crepin-Leblanc?
Present.
Mason Cole?
Present.
Thank you. And for staff, we have David Olive, Mary Wong, Julie Hedlund, Marika Corney, David Cate, Steve Chan, Lars Hoffman, Natalie Peregrine, and myself, Glenn de Saint-Gerie. And would you like me to mention the guests that we have on the call, James, or will we just note those in the minutes?
Thanks, Glenn. I think that we have a number of guests, and there are more arriving by the moment, so we'll just acknowledge them in the minutes, and also note that several counselors indicated in the chat that they couldn't be heard and are going to be dialing in or reconnecting their audio.
Thank you very much, Jen.
Donna and Stefania. So thank you, Glenn, and thank you, everyone, for making some time to discuss for the special session to discuss the CCWG supplemental report before we all start to make our way to ICANN 55 in Marrakesh. As part of our normal procedures, does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest? If so, please raise your hand. And seeing none, we'll just ask if everyone has had a chance to review the agenda that was circulated on the council list and is posted in the Adobe Connect screen now. And really, the agenda is just one main bullet item, which is to discuss the purpose of the meeting and kick off a discussion of the supplemental report of the CCWG. As we discussed during our last council call, this will not be a vote to approve or reject the CCWG recommendations. This is more of an opportunity to raise those concerns that have been discussed within the various stakeholder groups and constituencies to indicate whether or not the concerns that were expressed in the GNSO comment have been addressed or mitigated by this latest supplemental report, and also to provide just general discussion and updates for the work that's occurring at the stakeholder group level. So with that, I think we can probably just tee this up. And again, I'm hoping that this is, for the most part, an informal and free-flowing conversation. You know, if there needs to be additional structure or something, please let me know if you feel like we've gone into a free-for-all. But first, before we kick off the discussions, I think if we could ask the GNSO co-chair of the CCWG, which is Thomas Rickard, who, Glenn, I believe is on the call, if that's correct, or did I miss Thomas? I do see him there. If we could ask Thomas to just kind of tee up the conversation on CCWG supplemental, and specifically focusing on those changes that were adopted by the CCWG between the third draft report and the, and I guess we'll call it the final supplemental report or the draft final report. And then Thomas can address questions. We can also expect we can hear from some of the GNSO participants on the CCWG, as well as those counselors and participants and members that have been working within the stakeholder groups to review these recommendations. But if possible, I'd like to start with Thomas and turn the floor over to him and have him walk us through some of the changes.
Thanks so much, Thomas? James. Welcome to all of you. What you see coming up in the remote participation room is a small slide deck we prepared, and it was really a tough choice to pick those items that are of interest for council, because, you know, there's so much great stuff in our report that, you know, you best go through it and read it line by line, because it's just so much fun. I'm not sure whether I have the scroll control or whether all of you do have scroll control, but the way, I think you all should have scroll control. The way I would like to go about with this is give you a rough overview of what we have, trying to highlight the changes from the third draft report to this final report or supplemental report. And I would suggest that counselors ask questions if they need more detail, because certainly I can't go through each and every detail that we've been working on through the last couple of weeks. I am in the luxurious position that there are a lot of folks on this call who know a lot about details of the report. We have rapporteurs with us today. Jordan Carter from the CCNSO has accepted my invitation to join. So did Becky. Steve Del Bianco is on the call, as well as other other participants and members of our group. So I would call on them to offer more detail if we really go into the weeds of what our proposal is about. Just remember, we did the proposal. It's now a final report. It has a core section of 55 pages, 15 detailed annexes, and 11 appendices. So there's an awful lot of information. And for those who have reminded us of the need to be inclusive, you find them all translated into the languages that you read on the screen in front of you. So that's, I think, unprecedented in ICANN's policymaking so far. So the first big thing that we did, and that's also something where we had some tweaks, is the establishment of the empowered community. And as you know, we've chosen the sole designator model as the legal vehicle for the ICANN community to be able to ultimately enforce its powers if need be. We have the empowered community composed of SOs and ACs, which are which can be decisional participants. Let me rest with this term for a second, because it may become relevant for a discussion that we're going to have. As you know, we have seven groups in the ICANN community at the moment, currently, two out of the seven groups, namely ESSEC and RSEC, have informed us that they will not join the empowered community as a decisional participant, i.e., they are removed from the scheme when we come to establishing whether there is or there is not consensus on enforcing a community power or on exercising a community power. So that leaves us with five eligible decisional participants, the seven minus the two, ESSEC and RSEC, and these are the ones that we've reflected in our report as being decisional participants. So GNSO, CCNSO, ALAC, ASO, and the GAC are decisional participants according to our report. Rules on how this empowered community is institutionalized are in ICANN's bylaws. So I think that's the first important takeaway, because there has been some discussion around this. These five groups, unless we get a decision from them suggesting otherwise, are in the or will be reflected in the bylaws as decisional participants. That does not mean that they are forced to join each and every decision that is being made, but they are eligible to joining the decision-making scheme. A word on inspection rights. There has been some discussion between the third report and the final report about inspection rights. There has been some comment from various parties about the scope of inspection rights, and we have settled this by actually making a few tweaks. So basically what we have in there is now an inspection right to inspect accounting books and records of ICANN. And there was some confusion about the remit of the DIDP, which we're going to review in Workstream 2, and inspection rights. And we clarified the difference of the two. And basically what you have now is what we had in original thinking, i.e. that would be inspection rights as a member would have. We also clarified that such inspection right can be triggered on the wish of one decisional participant, and we have gladly accepted a proposal that was made by the ICANN board with its comment that there would be an additional investigation right, the right to audit, in case three of the decision participants of the empowered community wish to do that. So that was not there before. And because there was a concern that these rights, these inspection rights, could be used in an abusive fashion, we have agreed that there is a direction to the drafters of the implementation language that abusive claims should be avoided or prevented. Now, what you see on this slide are the seven community powers that you already know, which are related to the budget. And when it comes to the budget, we have made a few tweaks that I would like to highlight, and that is the budget rejection for the post-transition IANA budget has been significantly updated. We've worked on the caretaker budget, so that has been expanded. Those are the two major changes on the budget community power. Then we have the rejection to changes to ICANN standard bylaws, which, if memory doesn't fail me, remained unchanged. Then we have the power to approve changes to fundamental bylaws, and those who have not followed the discussion thoroughly, please note the change, which has also been visualized here, that for changes of standard bylaws, the community has the authority to veto such change, which is why you see this red check mark in the upper right box, while for changes to fundamental bylaws, there is prior approval required, which is visualized by the green check mark. And when it comes to approval of fundamental bylaws, we've now clarified that the power to approve changes to fundamental bylaws and or articles of incorporation and or to approve ICANN's sale or other disposition of all substantial ICANN assets should be in the fundamental bylaws. So that's been a tweak to that community power. Then we have the community power to remove individual directors. And with respect to that community power, there was the concern that those in the community that have or that raise their voices to speak out publicly, basically against the director, could run the risk of being sued for defamation or otherwise by the director in question. And there has been the request for both the directors signing a waiver prior to taking office and for ICANN to indemnify those individuals in the communities in the community that do speak. And we've come up with compromise language that would grant indemnification, including advance payments to be made to the community member in question that is legally challenged by the director whose dismissal is being discussed by the community. So that's sort of a significant change on that point. Then with respect to recalling the entire board, I think we did not have any change on that community power. We have the community independent review process, and with respect to that, we have the power, as previously stated, for the community to initiate a binding IRP, and panel decisions are enforceable in any court recognizing international arbitration results. And now we've also included the possibility for the empowered community to use the RFR, the request for reconsideration process. Previously, we've only discussed a community IRP, so we've broadened the possibility to seek remedies for the empowered community. Then we have the triple E approach, the engage, escalate, enforce approach. You will remember that we have institutionalized or made mandatory an engagement process in order to limit the risk of friction between the board and the community. So the collaboration, the exchange of positions and thoughts between the community and the board that is now done on a voluntary basis will henceforth be mandatory. And there have been some concerns with this escalation path that takes place, so it was criticized by some commenters as too complicated, and at the same time it has been criticized for not giving enough time to the community parts to really consider the issues in question. So what we have done is we've extended the time for certain escalation steps, to give the empowered community or the part of the empowered community sufficient time to internally discuss the community powers. At the same time, we've dropped the idea of a community call that was previously foreseen to allow for an informal exchange of thoughts to discuss the community power. So we've basically removed that, but at the same time, we've made it mandatory for the petitioning party to reach out to other SOs and ACs to socialize relevant information throughout the whole community before a community forum is held. So we've given more time for the individual steps, but we've removed one step and replaced it by this requirement to socialize the information in question so that everyone can come to the community forum well informed. So let's then, I guess that's it for the triple E approach. Let's now move to the thresholds. You see the thresholds for the different community powers. Here, there has been some debate with respect to what these thresholds should be and what the impact of what we call the GAC carve-out on the thresholds would be. So let me maybe use this opportunity to introduce this idea of a carve-out. You will have seen throughout the debate that there has been criticism that the GAC, which still has the authority to direct its advice at the ICANN board, can still participate in exercising community powers as a decisional participant. That was called double dipping in the trade, and therefore the group has come up with a compromise whereby the GAC, if a community power is exercised to tackle a board decision that was based on GAC advice, in that instance, the GAC would not be an eligible participant in exercising the community power, IC casting its decision whether to support or object to exercising a community power. So that is a change that was foreseen to avoid an increase of the role of the GAC. And in those scenarios, we would see a reduction of the eligible decisional participants in the community power. And there was a discussion whether that would impact and to what extent that would impact the decision thresholds. And we've then come up with a combination of a decision or of the escalation plus an IRP. So basically, if in case of a board removal, the community wants to dismiss the board, then an independent review process should be triggered where it is applicable. And in cases where the community wins the IRP, i.e., where the panel establishes that the board decision is violating the ICANN bylaws, then a threshold of 3 SOs or ACs being in favor of the board removal would suffice. But where the IRP confirms that the board has acted within the boundaries of the bylaws, the existing threshold would still be applicable. We can go into that in more detail as we go on. With respect to the decision thresholds that you see on the screen, those stand with this one exception that I mentioned. Those stand as long as we do not have any new arrivals in the ICANN community or any removals from the scheme. So our bylaws or the post-transition bylaws would explicitly mention the eligible decisional participants of the empowered community. And should we see the formation of, let's say, a new supporting organization or the removal of an SO or AC, would certainly need to readjust the threshold so that all these community powers can be exercised appropriately. So that's what we have in our report. Now it is subject to revision as the case may be in future instances. And we've clarified in our report and some think that this is not so clear, but in my view it is clear that, and this is the spirit in which the report has been drafted throughout 3 previous versions of the report, that if there is a change in the number of decisional participants, the bylaws would need to be amended to reflect that change, and the thresholds would need to be adjusted. So I would suggest that we move to the next slide. Now we can get back to these easily as we move on. So I think that I shouldn't go into detail on these. I guess this is an important slide. You know, since the GMSO has been a chartered organization of the CWG as well, that there was a request from the chartered organization that the accountability group, the CCWG, would need to meet certain conditions so that the approval stands. So if the CWG stewardship dependencies are not met, then the approval of the chartering organizations for the CWG report would no longer be existent. And it is only today that we have received a formal confirmation from the CWG that we met all their requirements. So we're good to go with respect to the CWG requirements. So let me... pause for a second. You know, we've been working on the language for ICANN's mission commitment and core values. I'm not sure whether you need more detail on those at the moment. Just go through my notes. Sorry for this. I think we should move on. We can back to this. We can get back to this at any point. I'm sorry that the format.
Thomas, no problem. Do you? This is James. Real quickly, I just wanted to know if we wanted to pause here. We've had a number of questions raised in the chat, and we could certainly take a cue on what you have presented to date. If you feel this is a good stopping point, or we could certainly, if you're near the end, we could certainly, you know, finish your update. Either way is fine. I just like some indication from you of how you'd like to proceed.
Thanks, James. I think I have three more slides, so I would suggest that I just go through them quickly, and then we take all the questions and start the discussion.
Perfect.
This is the slide to reflect the latest changes with respect to the human rights recommendation. There has been some discussion about whether or not an explicit reference to human rights should be made with our, in the bylaws at this stage. So the compromise language you find on the screen in front of you. So we will have explicit mentioning on the in the bylaws, and this is going to be fleshed out in a framework of interpretation that's going to be worked on in what we call work stream number two. Then we have made some progress on accountability of SOs and ACs. So we have the regular reviews in work stream one coming from the affirmation of commitments, and then we have a fuller review of accountability and transparency in work stream number two. This is, I guess, the last slide that I have, and that deals with stress test 18. So there has been some discussion on how the ICANN board should react to GAC advice. And we've now specified, and this is what you see in bold, that any governmental advisory committee advice approved by full governmental advisory committee consensus, understood to mean the practice of adopting decisions by general agreement in the absence of any formal objection, may only be rejected by a vote of 60% of the board. And if that takes place, then there is this consultation process that the board and the GAC need to enter into. That is a major change that we did on this recommendation. So these are the areas for Workstream 2, but you know all these. So that's the end of the presentation, and I hope that you will bear with me that it was hardly possible for me to follow the chat while presenting. So, James, I would suggest that you take back control over the session and that you maybe manage the queue, and then either I will respond to the questions there myself or defer to other leaders of the CCWG.
Okay, thank you, Thomas. Certainly appreciate that update, and I know that between the time that we asked you to come and speak to this group and the time that you had to have those slides ready, it was a fairly quick turnaround, so certainly appreciate you being able to accommodate that request. We've had a couple of questions and some discussion in the chat. I think we've captured two, both from Paul McGrady relative to inspection and how the GNSO specifically would invoke some of these community enforcement powers. Okay, so that's actually one question. Sorry, Paul, I thought you had two. Paul, are you connected to audio? Would you maybe want to raise your question on the line?
Yes, this is Paul McGrady for the record. My question was just really simple. From a GNSO perspective, there's these various community powers and different thresholds for this or that various thing. But what's not clear to me is how that actually works. Is that by way of GNSO council vote, or is that something else? Is there actually a mechanism in place already, or one that has been agreed to that will be in place on day one, or what? And if not, what are the various options, and how long will it take to come to some agreement on that, such that the GNSO essentially does not have any community powers for the first X number of whatever it takes for us to figure out how we're going to exercise community powers? Thanks.
Okay, thanks
very much,
Paul. And Thomas, I don't know if you want to take a stab at a response there.
Sure. Paul, at the, what we're saying in our report is that the decision-making is entirely up to the SOAC in question. So if the board chooses to form its view on whether or not a community power should be exercised, that's entirely up to the GNSO to specify. What we have foreseen, though, is that, you know, for the sake of simplicity, that the decisions made by an SOAC would be conveyed through the leadership. In this instance, it would be the GNSO Council Chair.
So, Paul McGrady again, follow-up question. So when you say it's up to the GNSO to make that decision, do you mean the GNSO Council, or do you mean the broader GNSO, the various organizations, grassroots kind of approach? What does that mean when you say it's up to the GNSO?
It is not foreseen in our charter that we would influence the decision-making processes inside the SOs or ACs. So Paul, I guess it would be pretty much up to the GNSO as such to specify how it wants to form its views on the community powers. The way I would envisage this to be operationalized in the GNSO is that the GNSO Council would basically collect the views from the various constituent parts of the GNSO and express its views by way of voting as it does today on other matters. Not sure whether Steve or others from the other members from the GNSO would like to add to that. If so, please do speak up.
Thomas, I know Steve Del Bianco's in the queue, and Steve, I know that you were participating in this exchange on the chat. So if you'd like to go on this topic, please go ahead.
Hey, thanks, James. Paul, I picked up right away when I saw in the chat, you asked the question, well, how does that fit with the GNSO Council's narrow policy-making remit? And this feels like eons ago in the chat on this call, but that's what prompted me to say to you that if Council itself, as the policy management body, felt that a particular decision, a document inspection decision, for instance, was somehow outside of the remit of Council, I was reacting to you by saying, fear not, GNSO can, through its own policies, have a resolution that simply ratifies what the underlying ACs and SOs have said. Now, I realize that for general resolutions in Council, it's a majority of each House but that may not necessarily be how council will arrive at a resolution, as to indicate that the chair of council has to answer the question when the empowered community says, CNSO, what say you to this power of exercising document inspection, or what say you to this resolution in front of us to spill the board of directors? And when that question's asked, the chair of GNSO Council has to provide an answer. And that answer could be developed through GNSO procedures we already have, or it could be new procedures that GNSO alone can control, because it's not part of policymaking. It's not part of the PDP and consensus policies picket fence. So it doesn't have to be a bylaws dictated procedure for GNSO to canvas its constituencies and stakeholder groups and come up with an answer. And you can see that the reticence here, Paul, is that none of us in the CCWG wanted to touch that third rail by telling CCNSO or telling GNSO or GAC or anybody for that matter how you indicate your decision when the community has to make a decision. So I was reacting to your concern that maybe there was a too narrow a remit for council, but that shouldn't be an impediment for council to pass along what the decision is of this GNSO community. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. And I think that there's been a number of responses in the chat that that align with your response, and I think align with Thomas's explanation as well, that first and foremost, the CCWG didn't prescribe a mechanism or a process for each of the SOs and ACs, and while we have some mechanisms currently at our disposal in the GNSO, if we choose to, we could certainly develop additional mechanisms or processes that are specific to the invoking of these community enforcement mechanisms. And I think that that's, Paul, to your question, ultimately, is that something that we are going to have to determine as a council in parallel with the implementation of this accountability work into the bylaws?
So this is Paul McGrady. I guess at the end of the day, this is a question that came up on the list for our constituency. At the end of the day, is I guess the answer is that this isn't settled. We don't really know how within the GNSO how the community power will work, and to the extent that that is an undefined thing, then we have to read the CCWG report in a way that essentially has that undefined. And I mean, that might be fine. I don't know. But it's not like this has been thought through or there's, you know, competing proposals on the table or anything like that. It seems to be a fresh issue. Right?
I think that's correct. It's undefined, and it's up to us to define it.
All right. Thanks. I mean, I think that this is the clarity that I was looking for. It's a clarity that says it's unclear, which is okay. You know, good to know.
Yeah. And when we have a blank, we have some work to do to fill it in. Exactly. Okay. We're going to try and kill that busy signal there. So, but it is a good question, Paul, and I think it certainly identifies that we have some work to do. Next up is Milton. Go ahead.
Hello. Can everybody hear me?
Loud and clear.
Good. Okay, so I'm changing the subject. I'm going back to recommendation 5. And Thomas's slide is an accurate description of what I thought the draft accomplished. And I agreed, and it reflects my understanding. However, when I actually reread the draft, I discovered a little clause in there that I found very disturbing. And I'm going to put recommendation 5, paragraph 146, into the chat so that you can all see what I'm talking about. So we agreed in our discussion, we had many long and complicated discussions about enforcing agreements. And the public interest commitment came up in that context because some people were concerned about their future and whether it could be enforceable when and whether they could be challenged on the basis of exceeding the mission. And my understanding of the outcome of that discussion was that we agreed to grandfather existing PICs and that the future PICs would be subject to challenge on the basis of exceeding ICANN's mission. But now what we have in paragraph 146 is something that does not reflect that consensus. And that is, it says, ICANN shall have the ability to negotiate, enter into, and enforce agreements. And suddenly, there is in a little phrase there, including public interest commitments with contracted parties in service of its mission. Now, well, I think it's, you know, whatever your position on PICs, I think it's completely inappropriate. Indeed, it's really weird to have a mention of something so specific in the general mission statement of ICANN, and I'm hoping this is just a mistake. Like responding to Becky here, we discussed this language to ensure that the in service of its mission caveat applied to PICs, but we already have language stating that in the notice, the instructions to the drafters in the next couple of paragraphs. But it's clearly wrong to have a mention of PICs, which the GNSO could decide not to allow anymore. The GNSO is going to debate that, my understanding is. So what is that doing in the mission statement? That's my question. And can we get rid of this mistake? Otherwise, some of us really will have problems accepting this recommendation.
Thank you, Milton. And I see that Becky has some thoughts on this in the chat and has also raised her hand. So, Becky, the floor is yours.
Thanks. The point here is that there are PICs in ICANN's contracts. And if ICANN wants to call a section of its contracts, which of course, you know, the GNS, the new GTLD contract was until the very last sort of the product of a long public process. But everything in ICANN's contract is subject to the mission statement and all contracting provisions, including any PICs, must be meet the test of being in service of its mission. So the mission statement clearly applies to PICs going forward. There was the grandfathering issue, which is a totally separate issue. We discussed, you know, the fact that there are probably PICs that right now, although there's at least one PIC that I think is probably problematic with ICANN's mission, and we solved that through grandfathering until there's a new until there is a new contract that replaces it. But to the extent that a PIC is in an ICANN agreement, this simply says you know, all of ICANN's contracts must be in service of ICANN's limited mission. So this does not expand the picture in any way whatsoever. It clearly says that the mission is limited and ICANN's right to contract is limited to that which is in service of that limited mission.
Thank you, Becky. Milton, yeah, and to Keith's point, please mute your line when you're not speaking or when you finish speaking because we're getting in quite a bit of background noise. Milton, is that would you like to continue on this topic or is that an old game?
Yeah, I'd just like to ask Becky. So if what you say, Becky, is correct, then you still don't need that phrase because if PICs are part of the existing contracts, then paragraph 146 says that ICANN has ability to enforce those agreements. with contracted parties. So what is that doing in there? At the very least, you have to agree with me that you should, if you want this to refer to existing ones, just to be clear, to you could say including existing public interest commitments. But again, I think that's kind of bizarre to have in a general mission statement that's supposed to be setting out the overall mission of the corporation. Do you understand what I'm saying here? There's no reason to have PICs in there if ICANN does have the ability to enforce its existing contracts and the PICs are already in the contract.
Shall I respond?
Becky, yes, if you're looking to respond.
The language there does not refer to existing PICs. Existing PICs are covered by the grandfathering period. This refers to provisions of the registrar and registrar accreditation agreement and the registry agreements, and says that all of them must be within ICANN's limited mission and in service of that. I do not disagree with you that the words including public interest commitments are surplusage there. I don't think it changes the meaning one way or another, Milton. And I think, you know, just any reading of that is quite clear. But I don't disagree with you. I think PICs would be covered whether we said it or not.
Thank you, Becky. And thank you, Milton. I think that's a good exchange. And Milton, I see you're back in the queue, but I do want to make sure that we have enough opportunity for counselors and folks who haven't been participating on the CCWG to raise their questions and get their concerns addressed as well. I see Thomas also has a hand up. So, Milton, if you have a quick point on this, we can...
It's a very quick question. It's just, Becky, what if the GNSO Council decides as a matter of policy that there will be no more PICs?
Well, then I don't even know what it means to decide there will be no more PICs, right? Those are just words, right? You could call any provision that says, you know, in service of my mission, I will, you know, I don't even know what it means to say there will be no more PICs. Because it is just a statement of what you're going to do or not do, which may or may not be within ICANN's mission and which therefore may or may not be appropriate in the registrar accreditation agreement.
Thank you, Becky and Milton. I think what we probably need to do is perhaps between now and our formal discussion on the 9th, get some clarity on this point and whether or not this is, you know, I think Greg posted in the chat here that this was just a reference to a specific type of agreement when we were talking about agreements generally, and I think that was my understanding as well, but we certainly don't want to introduce any confusion here, so... you know, maybe we'll take this offline and see if we can get some further clarity on this. But I noticed that Thomas has raised his hand, so we'll go ahead and turn the floor over to Thomas for a moment here. Thomas, go ahead.
Thanks, James. I'd just like to remind counselors of the fact that what we have in our report is not the final bylaw language. As I mentioned to counsel previously, these are instructions to the drafters. And I think the question that Milton raised may be one that will be answered by the drafters, because it looks like this is pretty much a question of drafting technique. And we have explicitly stated and tried to stay away from coming up with concrete language because, maybe some individuals in our group, but certainly not our group as such, is capable of drafting bylaws that would hold water under Californian corporate law. So let's not try to dive into wordsmithing. We've tried to capture the spirit of the recommendations. There will be implementation oversight So, you know, I guess I just wanted to make this point because this will not be the only place in our report where people might want to comment on exact language or exact words, but this is not what we've intended to deliver with our report.
Thank you, Thomas. And to that point, maybe you could help shed a little bit of light. When it comes time to actually start drafting the bylaws as part of the implementation of this work, those will also be subject to community review, comment, and ultimately approval as well, correct?
Yes, you're perfectly correct. In fact, we are going to kick off this discussion when we convene in Marrakesh. So we will ask for volunteers from our group, at least that's the plan from the, you know, from project management perspective, so that we have folks from our group, there will be folks from the board. We've already seen that there are some volunteers from the board that would like to engage in this. So let's ensure that we have broad representation from all groups concerned on the sub-team, and then this will be a collaborative effort between the community and the ICANN board and their respective legal advisors. And as would go for all bylaw changes, this bylaw change will certainly undergo public comment period issued or triggered by the board. So there will be definitely be the opportunity for the community to chime in whether the final bylaw language as suggested at the time is appropriately reflecting our policy recommendations.
Okay, great. And thank you for that clarification. I'm sure this is not the only point of either ambiguity or potential confusion that will need to be ironed out before this these recommendations are actually translated into the language of the bylaws. So, okay, the queue is clear. So that means if you have a question relative to this subject or any subject that has been covered by Thomas, then now's the time to raise those. Alternatively, if there are any counselors who would like to report on the work that's ongoing within their stakeholder groups or constituencies, or if they have any updates on the plan to review this between now and our discussions in Marrakesh, this would also be a good time to inform the rest of the council and the GNSO members and participants of the CCWG of just how we see this playing out between now and Marrakesh. I would remind everyone on the call that we have essentially a hard stop to our process at our public meeting on Wednesday in Morocco. That's March 9th, and that will you know, as we say in the Midwest here, hell or high water, we're going to have to vote on this to ensure that we make the timeline for delivery to the CCWG and to the board for approval to NTIA so that they can begin their timeline. So if there's anyone that has anything to report from discussions that are occurring within their stakeholder groups, now would be a good time to enter the queue. I can mention that from the perspective of the registrars, and I would also welcome any input from the two other registrar counselors, Volker or Jen, that there hasn't been a lot of discussion on the last two times I have teed this up on our mailing list, mostly because I believe that exchange that was coming out of the third draft report was fairly vigorous and centered on the thresholds that were established for the board to reject GAC advice. Once we described the compromises that were ultimately included in the supplemental report and described the carve-out mechanism as well as the enshrinement of the definition of consensus in the bylaws, I think that registrar concerns, to my knowledge, have been addressed. Now, I say that with a note that I intend to raise this again when we are all together in Morocco to ensure that that is indeed the position of registrars. But currently, I'm taking the deafening silence on our mailing list to mean that For the most part, their registrars are satisfied with the compromises that have resulted in this outcome on the accountability work. So that's what's going on in our neck of the woods, and I would welcome any other counselors who want to report on anything that they are seeing, particularly if there are any red flags or new concerns that remain unaddressed in the supplemental report that could, in fact, potentially jeopardize the GNSO's approval of the supplemental report and recommendations as a whole. So I see a flurry of activity in the chat, but no one raising their hands. I don't know if there's anyone wants to take this and promote themselves to audio. Wolf Ulrich, you're first in the queue. Go ahead.
Thanks, James. Wolf Ulrich speaking for the ISPCP. Just a quick report on what's going on in our constituency. So we had several rounds of discussion of the various proposals, and also in the during the last round of the last proposal, you know, we focused more or less on the issue with regards, as you mentioned, with the registrar, the voting, and the GAC carve out. And so we had just this afternoon our last call about that, and there was no objection to the proposal as it stands at the time being. So we feel we have the feeling that our concerns have been addressed with the proposal as it stands, and from our point of view, so we have no objection to that. What we have discussed in addition is the question of how the council is now going to proceed with that proposal and with the voting on it. And we discussed also the question of the two options you put to the table, James, whether to vote on the proposal as a whole, as an entire proposal, or in slices, recommendation by recommendation. We found after the discussion that there are, and we accept that there are still issues with some of the recommendations addressed by other constituencies, and we wouldn't like to suppress those issues in when it comes to the question of confirmation of the approval or not. But we felt it might be, from our point of view, more preferable to vote on a package solution rather than by recommendation by recommendation, and to address the remaining issues in a kind of separate writing to that. So that was the discussion we had on our constituency. To summarize, so no objection to the proposal as it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Wolf Ulrich. That is indeed helpful. And to your point, the motion and how the council will proceed to ultimately discuss and adopt the report will be covered here in Section 3.5. We can certainly jump ahead to that if everyone wants to take a look at that. I think it is currently an open question of whether or not we vote as a on the report as a package or whether we vote individually on each of the recommendations. I think that we've heard some fairly compelling discussions for either case. So I think one question I might ask of Thomas while we have him here is to, maybe weigh in on whether or not the CCWG has a preference of how they would like to receive feedback. I think I know the answer, but I don't want to presume. But I think that that is an option that is before us, and that we can move forward on that discussion. I think the one thing that we have certainly put out there as a marker is that we wouldn't go forward with any deferrals because of the time frame. But other than that, I think how we proceed is really up to the council. Now, it is possible that we could vote on a single motion, even though it has 12 separate whereas clauses for individual recommendations. But we'll go next into the queue. We'll save that for 3.5 here. We'll go next into the queue to Farzana. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you. My name is Farzana Baidi. I'm going to make a short comment on recommendation 10, which is about the accountability of ACNSOs to their community. So they have been arguing that CCWG, that because the community is going to be empowered, it has to be also accountable to its stakeholder groups. And so in order to do that, they came up with the idea to add amend the section 4 of the bylaws and say that the board should consider the accountability of the SO and ACs to their stakeholder group when they're carrying out the periodic review. Now, there are a couple of problems with this. First of all, this section of the bylaw is already there, that the board can invoke this periodic review. But the board can decide whether that organization has a continuing purpose in the ICANN structure, and the continuing purpose. So it might be able to say that the SOSAC does not have a continuing purpose, and also it can change the governance structure of the SOMAC. And the other problem with this article is that GATT is not subject to this review. So what we are doing, if we accept this amendment, we are we want to make board more accountable to the global multi-stakeholder community. We cannot have a bylaw article that gives the same board the power to change our governance structure. It can weaken us, and also board can threaten us with this in the future if it sees we want to use the accountability mechanism and the empowered community mechanisms that we have. It might say, oh, I'm going to invoke, this is just very hypothetical, but I just want to put kind of the extreme on the table so that we see how risky this amendment can be. And I have suggested multiple times that we just treat this issue in work stream 2, but they have decided that it should be amended. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for those comments. And I think that if possible, we could have other folks from the non-commercial stakeholder group weigh in as well, because my understanding is that each counselor may have separate concerns that may or may not affect how they would vote. So I want to make sure that we're hearing from and addressing all of those folks. But next in the queue is Paul. Go ahead, Paul.
Thank you. Paul McGrady for the record. I want to go and share some of the things that have come up on our list of open issues. But real quickly, I know we're going to address this later, but I saw here that Thomas said his preference would be for a block vote. My concern about block vote is that we are already dangerously giving the misimpression, even if we do line item by line item vote, that this is somehow a vote for the transition. This is a line item by line item vote for certain narrow proposals that we hope improve accountability within ICANN. The issue of whether or not the transition should go forward is a question that has never been asked and never been answered by this community. And so I think that if we do a block vote on all 12 of these, it just makes that problem of that question never been asked or answered even worse. So with that said, the issues that are being kicked around on our list One was what I've already raised, which is there doesn't appear to be a settled mechanism for how the GNSO will act as an empowered community. And until that's settled, that laces in quite a bit of ambiguity into the entire proposal. I was hoping that I would be told that actually had been kicked around, but it doesn't sound like it has been. That is one of the issues that was raised. The other big issue, a couple of other big issues, but another big issue on the list is just the breakneck speed at which this is all happening. People believe or feel that they are not being given time to fully digest the final product. Believe it's not a good form to race something that's important through. So be aware of that. I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. There are some things that have been kicked around. For example, an issue around whether or not an IRP can be launched that challenges an SO's policy development process unless that SO essentially joins in the IRP, which doesn't, if that's the case, that doesn't make a lot of sense, because what SO is going to do a PDP and then challenge itself on the outcomes. So that was a question. I haven't studied that one enough to have an opinion on that. Also, there's some questions around delegation and redelegation of CCTLDs. Again, I've not had a chance to study that question enough to have an opinion, but that was one of the issues that are being kicked around. And then one of our primary concerns as the IPC from the beginning has been we wanted in the fundamental documents for it to be clear that ICANN not only has the power to enforce its contracts, but it has the obligation to enforce its contracts. And that has never really been addressed, and it appears AWOL in these documents. So for what it's worth, that's a little heads up in what we're kicking around in the IPC. I would like to tell you that we had developed some proposed answers to these questions, but again, the timeframes here are just so incredibly compressed that we're, not in a position really at this point to do anything other than flag the issues. And frankly, some of these I have yet to study in enough detail to even take questions on this call about them, but I'm happy to try if anybody wants to ask questions. Thanks so much. Bye.
Thanks, Paul. Helpful update. I think that the concerns about the time frame, particularly, and I'm going to be as delicate as I can be here, particularly the last-minute course changes, were not particularly welcome. But I thank you for your update, and I would ask that that perhaps if you could come to Marrakesh with a write-up of the scenario that you described where an SO would challenge or would participate in an IRP that challenged its policy outcomes. I think that would be helpful, because I think that's a particularly noteworthy discussion. As I think, if memory serves, there were a number of threads on the CCWG that addressed tried to establish an equivalency between, let's say, a policy recommendation coming out of an SO, like the GNSO, versus advice, such as consensus advice coming out of something like an advisory committee, like the GAC. And so I think having, if nothing else, having a clearer picture of how that scenario would play out, I think would be helpful to addressing those concerns if they're raised in Morocco. So thank you for flagging that one. I think that's a good one. And the other issues as well, but that one just kind of jumped out at me. So, Steve, floor is yours.
Thank you, James. When Paul put the question that way, I thought I would be able to give responses to two of Paul's unsettling questions. So, Paul, we discussed this a bit earlier, that the CCWG would dare not tell GNSO how to make decisions. And if that leaves you feeling unsettled about how GNSO would participate, I think we have an answer. The default in GNSO is that council runs a resolution, and the default for resolutions that don't have to do with policy is a majority of each house. And, in fact, Paul, that is the rule being used next week when council will indicate its preference on the CCWG proposal, and that's not a policy decision. But as James has already indicated, council will consider a resolution, and it will take a majority of each house to approve it. So it is settled, Paul, to the extent that GNSO has a way of indicating its vote. And today, that way is a simple majority of each house supporting a resolution in council. But we are definitely leaving the door open that if in the future GNSO decides it wants to have a different mechanism for exercising the community powers that are granted, that council alone can determine that. So I think that settles one. Your second concern was really intriguing. I hadn't heard that before. A notion that a block vote on CCWG would somehow imply that council was endorsing the threshold question of should there be an IANA transition. I hadn't thought of that before, but if that's a concern, I strongly encourage you to do a resolution in council. I think there's still time to bring it up, and if you wish, see if council would debate a yes-no position on that question of whether there should be a transition. But by all means, let's not smush that question in to, as you said, an approval of the recommendations as a block. I would hate for having you be concerned about the vote because you thought it implied something that it didn't, and it would be better to explicitly raise your question about does the GNSO support the transition. I'm not sure how that would go, but if that's the question you want to raise and have it not be smushed into the vote, then raise it as a separate resolution. Thanks, Paul.
So this is Paul. If I can respond to that, I know that I don't want to hold up James Gannon, who's been patient, but I try to put this in the text, but Steve DelBianco, there's just no way that there's enough time between now and Marrakesh to raise that threshold question, get public comments back from the community, and pretend in any way that council has a clue how the community feels about the threshold question. It is unfortunate that it was never asked or never answered, but the bottom line is there's absolutely no way we could possibly do that in the days we have left. It's a question that maybe should have been asked a year ago by somebody, not sure, but to suggest that council should do that at the last minute, I think is that's not going to, you know, that's not a realistic thing to suggest. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. And you know, to Steve's point, I think it does make sense only if you... Wow. Okay. Thanks. I was just kind of pointing out that it does make sense to ask that at this stage in the process, only if you already know the answer. But I think generally you're correct. I agree that this probably should have been something that was explicitly discussed, you know, in the immediate wake of the announcement, either in 2014 or last year. But I think overall, a good slate of issues or concerns being raised by the IPC that need to be discussed and hashed out prior to a formal discussion in Marrakesh. Next up, and thank you for waiting, James, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Ben. Just to Paul's point on saying what I don't believe to be correct is that we haven't, as the GNSO, voted on the transition. On the 24th of June in 2015, we adopted a motion conditional on the adoption of the CCWG recommendation titled the adoption of the final transition proposal. And for myself and I think many, many others that have been involved in the overall transition work, we felt that was the GNSO very strongly endorsing the transition as a whole, with the caveat that we placed in that it was dependent on the CCWG meeting the needs of the CWG, which, as of today, Jonathan has sent the letter from the CWG chairs to the CCWG chairs indicating that, yes, those conditionals have been met. So I would say very strongly that the GNSO has voted for the transition in that motion on the 24th of June of last year. And, you know, to revisit that high-level discussion now would be a mistake, I think, in my opinion.
Thanks, James. And yes, I do note that we did that back last summer, and it was contingent upon finishing this accountability work as well. Okay, looking at the exchange in the chat here to see if anyone else wants to get into the queue. James, did you have any other points to raise from your perspective? I know you've been fairly active both in the TCWG as well as in the non-commercial stakeholder group. Are there any other SGs or constituencies that'd like to weigh in? I think now would be a good time. We've got about 45 minutes roughly left in our time, but we could certainly end at any time prior to that if there are no other questions.
So I can give you a quick 2-second update, and Robin, feel free to break in across me. So obviously the NCSG has been discussing it internally. We've kind of had to wait till we've seen a final transition proposal, though, which is something that we've only really got in the last few days. It will need to go through our policy committee to you know, be discussed there thoroughly. Myself and another couple of participants and members in the CCWG have raised some issues around the thresholds now that we have lowered the amount of SOs and ACUs who are going to be participating in the enhanced community or the empowered community. We have some concerns that we could be forced into a situation where unanimity is required in order to exercise the community powers. This has been a principle that we felt the CCWG had been, you know, working without since its inception, that, you know, the concept was that unanimity would not be required in order to exercise the community powers. But with ESSAC and RSAC stepping out and the GAC unable to come to a decision on whether it will step in or out, we end up with a situation where we are defining thresholds without knowing the final number of voting participants. And that could end up in a situation where if the GAC was unable to come to an agreement internally that they wanted to participate in a specific decision, that we would have a threshold that would require unanimity of the remaining participants in the enhanced community, the empowered community. We change terms so often, I keep forgetting. So some of us have some concerns around that. That's something that, personally, I would like to see us, you know, this can be solved by a simple word change from may to shall, in the fact that in the section that reflects the flexibility of the voting thresholds when the number of members of the empowered community changes. So that's kind of the last big thing that stands out from us at the moment. Obviously, we'll have to run it through our own internal processes as quick as we can, given the timelines. But, you know, from my personal point of view, speaking as a participant in the process since day one on the CWG, you know, I think we've come to a good place. I think the GNSO should be quite proud of what we've done. You know, we've shaped a lot of these discussions and we've given a lot of serious input and design into the way that ICANN will look going forward. And personally, I'm quite happy with the work we've done.
Okay, thank you, James. Appreciate that update and giving us the lay of the land of NCSG. Amr, I see you raised your hand, but Thomas was next in the queue. So, Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, this is just to respond to that very point that that James brought up. I made reference to exactly that discussion when I did my initial presentation. I think there might be some misunderstanding. We have eligible decisional participants. Those are the five SOACs that I mentioned earlier. We cannot and will not, with our report, prescribe that each and every of these groups must join a decision-making when it comes to exercising community powers. So it will not only be for the GAC, but also for the other groups to decide if the matter in front of the community is one that they want to join deciding upon. So we have eligible decisional parties. They are going to be put in our bylaws. We have the thresholds as specified in our report. Whenever a change to that is being made, the bylaws need to be revisited and the thresholds need to be adjusted. So in my view, we have all the components needed in order to have predictability and security for the community in our report. And we have implementation oversight to secure that the language that's going to go into the bylaws is reflecting that. And so I think it would be inappropriate, unfortunate, if we try to reopen the report at this point and change language. I think you know, this call is being recorded, right? So I think we can refer to the notes of this call, but I can confirm my understanding of the report that we have. And we have Jordan Carter with us on the call today. He was actually leading the work of that work party. And Jordan, James, if I may, I would like to invite Jordan to maybe enlighten us a little bit on the genesis of this recommendation and how the thresholds that we've come up with have been developed. And I hope that this will help remove some of the concerns that have been expressed on the list and in this call.
Thanks, Thomas. And Jordan, Thomas has put you on the spot there. If you can respond quickly, you're welcome to. Otherwise, we can go to the queue, and Amr is next.
If you want me to, I don't know if you can hear me. Is this line working?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Oh, hi, James. Thank you. Hi, everyone. My name is Jordan Carter, and I think I saw some of you at the ICANN meeting in Dublin when we were talking about this in the GNSO. I'll need to say very briefly that when we were developing these thresholds in Work Party 1, we were pretty aware that some of the SOs and ACs have more difficulty reaching decisions than others due to their internal decision-making processes. So thresholds were done with that in mind. But they were also done in mind with the five SOs and ACs that have been listed. So I just reiterate the point that if the number of decision makers changes, the thresholds have to change as well. There is no choice about that, and that's what I think has been debated on the list recently. Other than that, I'm listening and can chip in any sort of replies to specific questions in the chat.
Thank you, Jordan. Amr, thank you for your patience. The floor is yours.
Thanks, James. It's Summer. I just wanted to confirm James Gannon's earlier comments on the ongoing NCSG process and discussion around the CCWG's recommendations. The NCSG has different focal points, or obviously members of NCSG on each of the CCWG recommendations, and we hope to have a discussion at an open policy committee meeting with all our members directly following the GNSO working sessions on Sunday. But if necessary, we'll also take some time on constituency day to discuss these further. So beyond that, I don't think I can really be helpful in terms of what our decisions will be during the next council meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Amr. Thomas, is that a new hand?
I apologize, old hand.
Okay, thank you. So the queue is clear, and we have about 35 minutes left in our allocated time. What I'd like to do at this point is, and first of all, thank you for everyone who has weighed in on these issues. I think this is the beginning of a conversation. I don't know that we're going to resolve some of these questions today. I don't know that that was the expectation. I think it was to we had hoped to raise these questions, make sure that other stakeholder groups and constituencies and councillors and members and participants all had visibility to conversations that were occurring on and off the CCWG and within the various components of the GNSO. And I think we have achieved that. So thank you to all for participating. I'd like to pivot just a little bit here to discuss the process that we will prepare in for consideration in Marrakesh, and particularly the process that we'll use on Wednesday. Now, this is just a proposal at this point. It's something that I put out for folks to, you know, poke it with sticks and see if we can improve it. First off, I should note that Thomas expressed the desire of the CCWG to receive a GNSO approval or approval from chartering organizations as a package. I don't know that that's going to be possible. I think that's the preference from some groups, but I think that other groups have also indicated a strong preference that we itemize our vote on each recommendation. So this is probably the first question that we will discuss and resolve during our meeting in Morocco. So next with that, we have a draft process here that would essentially allow us to examine all of the 12 recommendations within the framework of a single motion. And each of those would involve a sort of a repeating process whereby we would read the text of the report, and certainly not the entire report, it will be there all day, but a summary of the recommendation, and then have a queue for discussion where each of the stakeholder groups can report what their stakeholder group has decided, either to support or not to support. They can certainly reference comments that were made on the third draft report and whether or not those concerns have been addressed or remain open. And then we can proceed to a vote. I do want to point out here that we probably don't have the luxury or opportunity to introduce new conditions, new prerequisites, new dependencies at this point. So saying that we have a concern, but in order to support this recommendation as written, we need certain things to change. I think that, to me, starts to sound like a no vote, because if the dependencies certainly cannot be met, I think we have to assume that it won't be met any time following the vote. So I think that that is that, to me, indicates that that particular recommendation and that particular concern would translate into a no. Once the queue is closed and we move to a vote, we can elect as a group to conduct a voice vote. And I think this might be helpful for some of the less controversial recommendations to help us get through our agenda a little faster. However, if any one counselor has an objection to this and would like to proceed to a roll call vote, we can certainly entertain that and move to a roll call vote. As indicated, the threshold for any given recommendation will be a simple majority of both houses. So that's the contracted party house and the non-contracted party house, including the voting non-com appointees. And then we would record the vote and the results and then prepare to move on. However, there's one thing here that I would like to throw out to the group for discussion is that we'd like to also offer at the end of each vote, a discussion where counselors on behalf of themselves or on behalf of their stakeholder groups can issue a rationale for their vote or a statement associated with why they voted the way they did. I think that, you know, just generally, these would be helpful if they were in writing and not necessarily lengthy speeches. I understand this is very complicated, and I understand certainly that some of the positions are very nuanced. However, I just note that we also have 12 of these to get through, and if we have each counselor, myself included, weighing in at length on each vote, we will be there well into the night in Morocco, and we will miss our dinner. So if possible, a brief statement or a statement referring to a written statement would be ideal, but we will allow for some discussion of how those votes were cast and why. Well, then, at the end of the voting for all 12 of these, we will roll up the level of support for all of the recommendations and report back to the accountability chairs. Some folks have asked me how the number of approved versus rejected recommendations translates into approval or rejection of the overall report. I think this is an open question. I think that it certainly is common sense that if a single recommendation fails to achieve the majority necessary in both houses, but the other 11 do, I think that that probably translates into an approved report. I don't know that that is true if we reject 2 or 3 or 4. Where that fuzzy boundary is drawn, I think, is a question for the council, and I think it's something that we need to discuss once we have a clearer picture of of how this is going to look in the weekend. So I would ask you to be thinking about that during the sessions that we have on Saturday and Sunday, is how do we translate any rejection into a rejection of the report overall. So that's something I think that we need to get on the table. And Robin noted in the chat that Ed Morris has requested individual recommendation votes. I think that is correct. And I see a hand now from Paul. But anyway, that's the draft process as it stands. Again, it's a proposal. It's my attempt to get something on the table so that we can discuss it. I'm not there's no pride of authorship here. I'm not invested in this, but I think it is at least a straightforward process that we can use to get through these 12 recommendations. And I'm certainly open to any ideas that would help streamline this or make it better. Paul, go ahead.
Paul McGrady for the record. On the issue of where the council would set the threshold for rejection, 2, 3, 4, whatever, it never occurred to me. That was a new thought, which is why would we want to do that? Why wouldn't we just pass along what happens and let the board decide whether or not they have the consensus from the community necessary to submit it to the NTIA or send it back? What's the upside of us declaring it a failure if we get to two or three recommendations we don't like? I guess my question is, why would the council be the deciding body about that based upon the outcomes? Why wouldn't the board be the decider about whether or not it passed? Does that make sense? Thanks.
I mean, it does, Paul, and so I think this is like a number of issues, is that we could, for example, pass that along to the board or to the, in this case, I believe, to the CCWG co-chairs and ask them to dutifully relay that to the board. I think that the upside there is that it's, as you mentioned, it's a little bit simpler, and it doesn't get us into the weeds if there are a number of rejected recommendations. However, I think that if we do get into a situation where we have, let's say, 3 recommendations that are rejected, we do run the risk that the board will make a declaration that we don't agree with, that says, okay, 3 recommendations, that's, close enough for government work. The GNSO has declared that they accept everything. Well, that wouldn't be the case. Or they could say, for example, that the GNSO has rejected the report, which might not also be the case. So I think we can certainly take that approach, but we do run the risk that the board might see things through a different lens than we would, either individually or as a group. So this is exactly why I think we need to have this conversation over the weekend sessions. But I think that we should, as a chartering organization, and I see Thomas has his hand up, so maybe he can weigh in on this, but as a chartering organization, I believe we do have some, we may have some prescribed response format that the CCWG is expecting from its chartering organizations, including the GNSO. So, Thomas, go ahead.
Thanks very much, James. And I guess this is the point in time where I hope you will forgive me for making a tongue-in-cheek comment to start with, and then go to a more serious response. The easiest way for council to avoid any ambiguity is to just vote yes to the whole package. then there will be no discretion for any party to construe what the council's or the wider GNSO's wish was or not. I would like to remind all of you that there is a lot of responsibility on us at this stage. This is happening on world stage. So we are, with the votes that are being cast, with the decisions that are being made by the chartering organizations, we are adding to or eroding the legitimacy of the IANA stewardship transition proposal. So I would like to request all councillors and their respective groups not to take a decision on the rejection of one or multiple proposals lightly. Please do apply what we've called the die in the ditch test for a while in our group. So even if you don't like 100% what we've recommended or what the community has recommended, would you die in the ditch over not getting your ideal scenario? And if you apply this test, maybe you will be a little bit more gracious and even say yes to a recommendation that you don't like. But you would still support it because we've undergone various public comment periods. We've listened to all the concerns. And I think we've, at this stage, come up with the best proposal that we could possibly come up with the broadest possible support from the community. And I do know that this work in a cross-community working group is not the same as PDP work that is being conducted in the GNSO, but I have vivid memory of a council deliberation and ultimately a vote on the IGO-INGO PDP policy recommendations, and that was a group that I happened to chair. And you know that the IGO-INGO piece was very, very controversial, but it was unanimously adopted by council. And there were councillors going on record saying that even though they don't like all parts of the work product, they have respect for the process and how the recommendations have been developed and how the community's views have been incorporated into the recommendations. And I hope that you would apply the same thinking for this final report of the Workstream 1 recommendations of the CCWG.
Thank you, Thomas. I think that's helpful. I do appreciate that. I know that Paul raised the question and then lost sound, so hopefully he was able to catch some of that. Okay. So, and I think Robin made a point in the chat as well, and I don't know if she wants to speak to this, but I think just noting that we should have a fairly transparent record. And I tend to agree that as long as we conduct our discussions and our votes and record everything out in the open in a public forum and record that and transmit it back to the CCWG, I think for the most part, our intentions and our positions on this will be clear. But I think that we should have a clearer discussion of what happens if that process fails. Because I believe it is potentially vulnerable to some ambiguity if we start to see recommendations fail to achieve that particular threshold. So Stephanie is in the queue. Welcome, Stephanie. You're up.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. This may seem like a very naive question, but I've had a hard time following the state of play on all the various things that are in and out and last minute. And I'm wondering what the process is, if we do vote through, for fixing some of the things that are going to rear their ugly heads shortly. So, for instance, the PICS example, I agree with Milton, that shouldn't be where it is. How do we fix that? Is this going to be like a trade agreement that you don't look at for the next 20 years? What's the process? It's not clear to me what's going to be fixed in the next work stream and what we're stuck with forever.
Thanks, Stephanie. So I'll take a swing at this. I'm probably sure to do a terrible job of responding, but I'll take a shot, and Thomas and some of the others might want to weigh in as well. My understanding is that once this effort is completed, that it will kick off an implementation effort to begin to the work to actually draft these recommendations into language that will be incorporated in the ICANN bylaws. I believe that there's a sticking point that we believe is not necessarily, let's say, a showstopper in a recommendation, but, for example, a point of ambiguity, or if there's additional clarity is required, then I think that that is something that we can certainly attach to our approval that was sent back to the CCWG, that we expect and anticipate that this will be resolved in the implementation, that we would participate with that objective in mind. And I say that noting that that doesn't work if this is actually a showstopper, where if we believe X and some other groups believe Y, and you know, I think that going into implementation with that kind of a deep divide is a recipe for a problem. However, if it is simply a correction or a clarification, then I think that that is one opportunity that may exist to address that. But I think that, you know, the cake is mostly baked at this point. I think that that's really just an option for addressing any rough edges that need to be sanded off. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Yeah, Stephanie again for the record. Well, it'd be nice if we had some kind of way to, and I know ICANN doesn't do this, take a derogation on a particular chunk of text and put it in square brackets. I understand that's not what the Commerce Department had in mind when they launched this thing, but it concerns me as someone who hasn't been following it that closely. Frankly, even as late as 3-4 days ago, people who've been following this assiduously for a year couldn't agree on what the voting number meant, you know, in the latest argument about GAC. How are we supposed to figure that out? You know, it'd be nice if we could fling some brackets around it, or at least say we need further work on this. Is there any way we can do that?
So, again, I think it depends on the nature and the depth of the issue. If it's an actual disagreement, then I think at this point, no, there's not an opportunity to go back, reopen, renegotiate, and redebate some of these points that, particularly if it was a point of contention with other SOs and ACs or representatives on the CCWG. And I'm looking to Thomas to maybe tell me if that's correct, but I think that that part has closed. I think that if it is something that we believe was an omission or something that requires clarity, then I think that we can flag that, maybe not square brackets, but at least identify that there's some language that is missing or some clarifications that are required in order to go forward, and we can proceed to raise that as part of the implementation. So I guess I don't have a good answer for you, Stephanie, except to say it's going to be situational and very dependent upon the nature of the issue. Thomas, go ahead.
Thanks, James. And Stephanie, thanks for the question. I guess there is no possibility for us to put brackets into our record. I know that this is a technique that is applied in other fora. This is not possible. So the report is what it is. You will remember that I mentioned earlier that we tried to encapsulate the spirit of what should go into the bylaws in our report, but that the language offered in our report at present is not final bylaws language. So it will depend on the drafting technique applied by the legal advisors to help fixing issues that actually stem from drafting. We can certainly ensure that the spirit of our recommendations is appropriately reflected in the bylaw language by just looking at it during the implementation oversight that's going to be there with our participation. So some of the points were, and I'm not making explicit reference to the one that you mentioned, but where the group feels that the report was not explicit enough, we can then say, okay, this is what we intended to frame when we wrote our report. So there's a little bit of wiggle room there, but for the main points, for the main policy decisions, we have what we have in our report, and we can certainly change those things, but such changes in a post-transition world would be subject to the same rules, i.e. the processes for changing standard bylaws and the process for changing fundamental bylaws, as we've spelled it out in our report. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. I think that's a good point. And Stephanie, to your question, I think in the chat, you know, I would hope that we would signal those concerns to the CCWG for inclusion in the implementation effort. For example, to say that, you know, we're approving this, or we're voting to approve this particular recommendation because our reading of the language indicates that, you know, X, Y, and Z, and we expect to see this reflected in the bylaws. And if this is different, then, well, I don't think that we would have an opportunity to have an or else attached to that statement. But I think that at least putting that marker down and saying we approve this recommendation because we read it this way would help to drive some of those clarifications. And I do note that I did say something wrong in the chat there. I believe I said something about that the SOs and ACs vote on changes to the bylaws, including the implementation of these recommendations. And Marika pointed out that that's not correct. That's actually the board that votes on bylaw changes. However, the community is consulted, and there will be a public comment, an opportunity to weigh in on that. So I apologize for speaking out of school on that one. Stephanie, a new hand or? We'll go then to Paul.
Thanks. Real quickly, this is an important topic because the, you know, the recommendation 11 still contains the, in the proposed bylaw, still contains the language that says that certain GAC advice can only be rejected by a, now it's down to 60% vote, so it's one less vote, but that mandatory vote language still remains. And everybody that likes that particular recommendation, you know, continues to assure me that the drafting notes says the opposite, that a vote is not mandatory, even though the draft bylaws clearly indicates that it is, but not to worry because the drafting instructions will, you know, ensure that the implementers get that right and that we don't end up with a mandatory vote on GAC advice or else it's accepted. Well, so my question then is, well, what happens if the implementers get it wrong and we end up with something that we didn't really vote for? You know, I guess same question that Stephanie has, what's the mechanism to address that? Sounds like from chat that maybe it's just that we raise the issue in the public comment and hope the board, you know, fixes it. I don't know why they would be motivated to fix it, but so I guess the question is maybe should we be thinking about putting in to the vote the presuppositions upon which the votes are based for each of the proposed recommendations? I don't know. That sounds a bit cumbersome, but maybe that's work that needs to be done on the front end. I don't know what good it will do us on the back end because there's no mechanism to actually fix anything that goes off the rails, but it might make us feel better, I guess, and probably is, you know, something to be on the record about. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. I think you and I were thinking very similarly there. Thomas, you're up next.
Yes, thanks, thanks, James. And just a word of caution, I would hope that council doesn't take the route of adding conditions to its approval. I think that would be a recipe for disaster because other SOs and ACs might take the same route and then we end up having a proposal. We don't really know what to make out of these responses that we get from the chartering organizations. So I'm not suggesting that you should not add any expressions of what understanding of the report you had. But if I may, I would like to ask you to be very conservative with any narrative or explanatory notes, if not requests or conditions, to our to your feedback to our group.
Thank you, Thomas. That's understood, and I think that what Paul was expressing, not to speak for him, but it's very similar to my statement earlier, which is that we should feel free to indicate how we were reading the language when we voted to approve it, and certainly that's a communication to the CCWG and to the, later to the implementation work, too, that if they encounter that ambiguity when crafting the language of the bylaws, that they can then refer back to those statements to ensure that that is the language is reflects the spirit of the approval that was granted. James, go ahead.
Thanks, James. I'll be very brief. I just want to make sure that, you know, like many councillors that will not have been able to follow this, just to briefly explain that for implementation, this isn't going to be a similar to the PDP implementation. This is going to be a much more interactive process. The implementation of the CCWG report, and in particular the bylaws drafting, which is, you know, where most of the GNFO concern would come from, I think, will be done by the CCWG's independent counsel working in conjunction with ICANN Legal. So this isn't going to be a situation where, you know, the GNFO endorses the report, hands it off, and then suddenly 6 months later a set of bylaws come back that have been ratified by the board, and we go, wow, what the hell happened here? You know, this is going to be an iterative process working with our own independent counsel for the CCWG, ICANN Legal, and input from, you know, the CCWG members also. So while there is not a ratified vote that we will be going through during the implementation process to say, yes, we are happy with this, you know, our counsel will be intimately involved in the drafting of those bylaws and making sure that they very much match the needs, wants, and intent of, you know, the GNSO for us and also all the other ICs and SO. So it needs to be very, you know, clear that this isn't going to be a handoff to ICANN Legal or to anybody else. You know, both the members and the CCWG's independent counsel, who have provided us great independent advice to date, will be intimately involved in that process.
Thanks, James, and a good point as well, that the drafting of these bylaws and the implementation of these recommendations will not occur in a black box. So, okay, the queue is clear. We have approximately 5 minutes left in our allocated time. So if you'll indulge me, I'll just take those last couple of minutes to say thank you. Thank you to everyone who made some time today on your bonus day for 2016 to come in and discuss CCWG. I think this will get us at least at a minimum 2 hours further down the road than we would have been when we arrived at ICANN 55. Thank you to Thomas for his work on this group. You know, I can't tell you how many times over the last, 12 to 14 months where I've thought to myself that, you know, he and Leon and Mathieu possibly had the worst volunteer jobs at ICANN, and I thank him for his patience and for his work on this, and I think that extends to all of the GNSO participants and members, and I don't want to call anybody out by name, but I know a couple of folks who've done some really, really heavy lifting on some very specific and complex issues and stress tests that have translated, I think, into some very meaningful recommendations that we wouldn't have otherwise. So thanks to those folks and, of course, staff who always make it all look like it was happening on purpose. So appreciate their work as well. Thanks, everyone. I would say if you're headed to Morocco in the next couple of days, please, stay safe, and hopefully your travels are uneventful. And our next chance to chat will be on Saturday in the GNSO working sessions. So thanks, everyone, and I look forward to some healthy discussions on the mailing list between now and then, as well as in the room in Morocco. Thanks.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.